Hey, what's up? It's the Black and Jew Podcast. Black and Jew Podcast, episode 40.
Episode 40.
40. Now we're 40 years old.
Yep.
That's right.
So and what does that mean?
That means...
That retirement's coming soon?
That means...
Not soon, but in, you
yeah,
know,
you know, we start thinking closer. About it. We're planning for it.
We're getting to the crest of the hill.
Little Jimmy right? and Jane are off to college.
We're not young. I remember when 21 happened. How naive were we back then?
Right? Oh, my gosh.
Just started to drink. Just started getting a drinking problem. But
still
now,
using articles.
Now we're getting mature.
Yes.
And we have such an awesome guest today. We have Freddie Stebbins.
Freddie Stebbins.
Oh, boy.
Freddie Stebbins, a.k.a.
Many different.
A.k.a. many, yes.
Yeah, many different.
Yeah. Well, look, guys, thanks for having me. I'm honored to be here with such mediocre talent, and I really, really appreciate it. I had no idea this was like a black and white thing. I had no idea.
Yeah, it is.
You
we
know.
Alternate guests of races.
Okay. Know. Oh, good. Well, there's only a few.
Yeah.
You can pick from.
We have a black guy, then a white guy, and then every other
yeah.
episode.
Okay.
Originally,
well, good.
Originally, I just wanted to have black and Jewish guests, but there weren't mm-hmm. enough Jews. So
right.
after we went through, like, I think it was Rezkin.
And yeah.
What other Jews?
Well, he's enough. That's enough Jew for like.
That's like five episodes.
That's like five episodes of Jew. That's a whole Rosh Hashanah.
Oh yeah, that's a Rosh Hashanah. That's lots of Jewishness going on.
Well, no, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me. Wow, this is incredible. This is, by the way, for any of you listening out there, this is quite a setup. This is.
I was explaining to Freddie that it's the windscreens that make it look good.
So, yeah. guys, you want to make anything look
yeah,
good,
just put windscreens in front of a cheap
you
microphone.
Could put, you could put a windscreen in front of your penis, and it'll be like, hey, this is really
this
official.
I'm going to suck on that thing. That looks mm-hmm. professional. Yeah. Like Reggie's microphone I bought from Artistic Vibes for like $10 or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Do they sell microphones there? Is it
no,
a comedy
don't.
Club
it's
where
not,
they just sell equipment when
yeah,
they're done?
They're a thrift shop and a video at the same
really,
time.
Really? What a great concept.
And that microphone stand I got from them also, because I was just like, hey, is there some stuff you're not using? I'd like to buy it from you guys. You know, maybe
sure.
you could buy some lunch for yourselves
sure.
or something
and it
like
also
that.
Cut down on the comedy there, which is, could be helpful, I
yeah,
suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this is just fantastic, and I know you're going to be moving to L.A. soon.
Yeah, on Monday.
On
yeah.
Monday.
When this episode goes out, actually, I'm going to be on the road. I'm going to be
yeah.
maybe
oh,
in I'll be
God.
In Texas, maybe. Or no, I'll be in Louisiana when this episode
Sweet.
Goes out.
Sweet. You're going to be in Nollins.
Eating some crawfish or eating some beignets or something
yeah.
like that.
Some jambalaya. Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is a perfect, you're the perfect guest to have for my mm-hmm. last episode in Miami.
Yes, well, thank you.
Because you encompass so many aspects of Miami. Mm-hmm.
Well, as you know, Michael and Reggie, I've given up.
you heard it here, folks.
I have given up. New York or L.A. is not in my future. I have decided to be rebellious and stay here.
Is it rebellion or...
Or denial?
Or complacency. Which one is it? Denial,
no,
rebellion, complacency?
No, it's...
Well, we need to first tell people what you do.
Okay.
Because yeah. what you do is very special, and you are, as far as my knowledge extent, as far as I know... The only guy that does what you do.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And yeah. what Freddie does is like, one, he's a teacher. He's mm-hmm. a professor, correction. He's Correct. A professor because he professes. He doesn't teach.
Right.
He's a radio host. Mm-hmm. He runs a room, very successful room, one of my favorite rooms. And he also does characters like the good old Nick Kroll. He has characters under his belt. Like what?
Yes.
We're at like six, seven?
I have about eight that I do regularly. The character, I mean. And I have about 13 that I'm somewhat
wow.
proficient at. And they're all, as you guys know, Miami-based characters. So
yeah.
I really try to milk the whole Miami thing. I kind of want to be like the Don Rickles of Miami or something like that. I don't know what, but you're right. I wear different hats, so I can't really just pick up and go away. I'd really just like to make the most of my weird craft here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you do it. I don't know anyone who does what you do, or if there's someone tried to, it's like, mm-hmm. I would be discouraged if I was going to do Miami characters and I saw you, I'd be like, well, someone's already got that market cornered, so fuck it.
Yeah. That's my goal, is to discourage as many people as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I do many different characters. Thank you for that kind introduction. You are, Reginald and Michael are two of my favorite comedians.
Favorite mediocre comedians.
No, they're beyond mediocre. They're moderately good.
I'm putting that on my website. Yeah. My Twitter picture is going to be moderately good. Freddie Stebbins.
Yeah, and I gained this sort of experience just through my life living down here. I'm a kind of a gringo from Miami, and I just have a good ear, I guess. I moved out to LA for a while to follow that dream. It was successful, actually. I joined a great troupe called the Groundlings, which taught me a lot of my improv skills.
That's a big
skill.
Name troupe.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were in the Groundlings.
Well, I made it through the program, which is a very intensive, competitive program. And once I made it through, out of the hundreds or thousand people, there's only about 10 left. And out of those 10, you're lucky if you're one of the 10 that gets picked to be in the actual Groundlings. Huh? I didn't get picked to be in the troupe, but neither did Helen Hunt, you know, so who was also in the Groundlings. So, yeah. And I got a radio job out there for the Dodgers, and it led me to a TV job back in Miami. So I wound up here. And
what TV job?
It was on a channel called the Travel Channel, and I was a host.
Just
I
the
know.
Travel Channel.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're famous, when you want to act famous, like, oh, I don't know, it's a city. I don't know if you've ever heard of it called New York.
you're yelling at your agent. You're like, this Travel Channel sucks.
Yeah, I'm on this show, Entertainment Tonight. You've probably never heard of it. It was about 13 years ago. I was a kind of a guest host on a travel dating game that was pretty famous.
So were you born in Miami?
I was.
All right, you were born in Miami.
Yeah.
And so then you moved out to LA. Like, how old were you when that happened?
I was already 30.
Oh, okay.
28.
Oh, all right. 28. About the time that I'm going.
Yeah. Yeah. And I loved it out there. I loved it out there.
Yeah. On Monday. That's why all the boxes.
But you know what? It rains a lot out there in the winter, and it's cold.
Yeah.
You're a Miami guy. You're a Florida guy.
Mm-hmm.
It gets cold. Anyway.
Yeah, it's free. Christine put on the heater last night. It was 73.
So, yeah, that brought me back here, and I wear a lot of different hats. But my main thing, yes, Reggie, is I like to do voices and characterizations of the different oddities of people that live in South Florida.
Now, how did that happen? When did you decide to do... There's a name for this comedy. Like, there's a name for this specific type of comedy.
What, character stuff? Character?
Yeah, like, there's a real name. Like, there's a name for it. Like,
Less talent? No, I'm just...
Hiding behind the mask of a
character? Hiding behind the mask of...
But, like, how is that your voice? You know how you go through comedy, you have to do a bunch of shows, and then you finally start finding, like, your groove, your voice. Like, a lot of people, like, just do standalone impressions, or a lot of people, some people use a puppet. You do like these characters, and how'd that come about?
That's a great question. I was one of those kids that everyone told me I was funny, but I didn't really believe it because my friends were telling me I was funny. And like most comedians, we're not sure. So I was told you have to do stand-up comedy to be legitimately funny. And of course, as you know, that doesn't really mean you're funny either. But
what are you talking about? I love all those comics that have those great 9/11 rants. I mean, it makes the audience so uncomfortable.
Yeah. So, excuse me. So I tried stand up, but my background is from doing improv.
Yeah.
My background is from doing voices. I'm the voice of some of the rides at Islands of Adventure, for example. I'm the voice of Dr. Doom there. I don't know if you've ever been there.
What?
Shit.
Yes, no way.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're the voice of Dr. Doom?
I'm one of Dr. Doom's henchmen. So okay, when you walk in... Shut up. So when you walk into the ride...
Whatever.
You can hear... You hear me. I'm like that voice you hear.
Yeah.
You know? And I started getting these gigs. I'm also the voice of one of the Dr. Seuss characters I got voiceover jobs, and I realized that people were laughing at me because I was in character. I was doing voices. Yeah. So I transferred it over to stand-up comedy the best I could. And the way of doing that is by becoming the character. You can't just do the voice.
Yeah.
You really freaking have to become this character. And that's what I try to do. Because when you're in character, you can, no matter what you do, it's interesting. Or sometimes funny, or sometimes very racist. Either way.
Sometimes all of those at the same time.
All at the same time, yeah.
Usually all of those at the same time. Let's be honest here.
Yeah. So, Dr. Doom, I'm the voice you might hear if you take your kids there someday. It's still there. Would you like me to do it for you?
Do it. Yes, I would love. Mm. We're not going to get sued by Universal, right?
No, no, all right. No. And keep in mind, it's edited. So go in line there, and you'll hear, "Welcome to the Latvian Embassy, home of Dr. Victor Van Doom. When in the embassy, hold trust, for Dr. Doom takes no prisoners. If you are under the age of 12, and then you have to, the doctor, yeah. The henchman doesn't seem as mean anymore. If you are suffering from a heart condition or...
That's my favorite part.
So, oh, it's hilarious. I was there this summer. I took my nieces there, and they were like, "Oh my God, you're a freak."
That's like, that really just takes the wind out of its sails.
Totally, yeah.
You're under the age of 12. Yes. Please, if you have epilepsy, remember there are strobe lights.
If you are afraid of bee stings, please make sure your prophylactic is with you at all times. But remember, Dr. Doom holds no prisoners. Yeah.
Especially if you are pregnant or nursing.
Right. Right.
Because we would not want to put you under those conditions.
The other one I do there is McGallagher's Pool. This is in Seusland. Have you ever been to?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it's really, really stupid. There's this area where basically you go to smoke cigarettes and change your baby's diapers.
That's a great thing to have in the same place.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're smoking cigarettes very, very near healthy. The babies.
I don't know where to put
ashing
this
out in the shit. Just right, ashing right. Out in the
this one's been shitting for days.
And there's this voice that plays over and over again. It's so obnoxious. It's me. It's a guy fishing.
Oh yeah.
And he can never catch the fish, whatever. And it goes, it's called McGallagher's Pool. "Young man, you're but a fool. You'll never catch fish in McGallagher's Pool."
Wow, that's like, how long ago did you record that?
I recorded that in the year 2000.
Oh my God, 14 years ago? Yeah. And you're still like...
And they only paid me once for it.
They only pay you once for it?
Yeah. For me, it was a lot of money back then.
You're getting those royalty checks still?
Yeah, I wish.
Yeah, imagine if you got like 1 cent every time that played.
Oh my God, they play like 700 times a day.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's maybe it's a way to prevent people from smoking. It's like if you smoke, you have to hear this obnoxious thing over and over again.
"Young man, you're but a fool. You're a cigarette away from a tumor or two."
I was trying to smoke and...
That's what it really should be.
Smoke and change his diaper.
All right.
It's like, yeah, this baby's got a lot of burn marks. Cigarette keeps falling out of my mouth.
Play with my smoke rings, baby, while I change you.
That's funny.
I love watching you do your character stuff. For some reason, like character stuff makes me laugh harder than any stand-up can. Like, even like a really good stand-up. Like, I don't know. Like, I remember when Forrest was leaving town. And you guys did that what is it?
Like a tribute show?
What was the John Wynn's, why isn't my mind...
Elwood's?
No, you know John Wynn's web series?
Labor Days.
You did like a Labor Days show, and Will Lopez hosted it, and you were doing the preacher thing. I was like fucking shitting my pants. It's so funny.
Yeah, you know, I come up with these characters, and I practice them. It's weird, but I'll literally, if I hear something on the radio, I'll turn off the radio and I'll try to mimic that all the time. Or if I have a few cocktails in me, I'll be that character for 30 minutes. And then suddenly I wonder why people don't like me or I don't have a significant other or things like that. But that character was a growing up in Miami, you guys probably know this. The whole gringo southerner thing has kind of faded away.
Oh yeah,
from Miami, especially that old southern Georgia thing. But there's still a few left.
My mom actually, when she went to Hialeah High, it was all rednecks.
Wow,
yeah,
isn't that amazing?
All blonde-haired rednecks. The whole cheerleading squad was blonde.
That's unbelievable.
In Hialeah High.
Oh, that's
and
incredible.
We were watching the TV, and there was like this cheerleading squad from Hialeah High on it on like Channel 4 or whatever. And she's like, and they're obviously all Cuban, and right. they all have like dark hair. And she's like, "Yeah, when I was here, it was all blonde haired girls on the cheerleading squad."
Yeah, it's a different world. This guy is the character. This guy I did on Labor Days is he's sort of a well. Let me tell you what I want to do. What I want to tell everyone that's listening on this podcast, which is being broadcast, by the way, by a black man and a Jew. Now, don't get me wrong. I love all you people. Let's pray together. Dear white, Protestant, blue-haired God of the love in the sky, who's a Republican and will probably vote for Rick Scott because he's good for jobs. Anyways, he goes on. I love my Emma. I love my Emma.
What subject do you teach in MDC?
I teach basically sociology.
So does sociology lend itself to like to your craft? Because I mean, the sociology classes I've taken, or at least my understanding of the subject, is social. Like knowing how different people interact or why people interact and how those interactions affect other things.
Absolutely.
And like when in the case of the preacher, you got this character who needs to socialize in this way.
That's right. And is dealing with the conflicts of society changing in a world that he's in a shell he's been living in.
Yeah.
He asks great questions.
Yeah, I know.
Like he's like the smart one and you're.
It's true. Because he has the glasses.
Oh, that's right. He does have the glasses. Yeah. So sociology and social studies for college students is really about observing stereotypes and traditions and why people act the way we do and why we have certain feelings based on how the society affects us. So there's no doubt that sociology has played a part in it. Yeah. And I teach my classes in this style also. You can imagine my classes are very, I like to say they're sold out.
Wait, do you really do character stuff in your classes?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Every day.
Holy shit, that's awesome. Yeah. That's like worth the price of tuition to MDC.
Those
lucky bastards.
Today, for example, we were talking about the difference between jealousy and envy in society. And jealousy, I'm not going to get too scholarly on you, but jealousy has to do with the romantic interest, a loss of romantic interest.
Do we get credit hours for this?
Yeah, you get 2 points for this.
Sweet.
And envy is wanting something. It has nothing to do with... In Miami, this is a typical example of the wrong use of jealousy and envy. Uh-huh. Here we go. Oh my God, bro. Like my name's Caesar. I totally love Miami and all that shit. Like, oh, can I say that? Can I say shit?
Yeah, we got the explicit tag on iTunes, so you're good.
Well, okay, whatever that means. Okay. But for real, like, oh my God, for real. Bro, you're not going to believe this shit. Like, Czar, my friend Czar, like, no. Oh my God, that's fucking hilarious, bro. Listen to this. I'm so jealous, bro. Like, he just got new rims, and I'm so fucking jealous, bro. Like, I heard that, like, those rims, like, every time I see those rims, I get jealous. Like, I'm totally so jealous, man. I'm so jealous of you, bro. Okay, I did that today in class. They understood that you're not having sexual... You didn't break up with the rims, you know?
Yeah.
Fucking the rims.
You don't watch enough TLC, obviously.
That's right. You're supposed to say, I'm envious. I'm envious of your incredibly kinky hair. And your somewhat articulate black man style. I'm envious of that. So, I'm kidding, by the way. Well, a little bit. What I'm trying to say is... I do characters in class, yes.
That's awesome, dude. That's so cool. I wish I had professors that did that.
Yeah. Well, people get it more when you do that. You know?
It makes people not want to skip class.
I have good attendance.
When you think of like teaching comedy and like preaching, for example, those are all like, you know, those are all expressions where you have to be in front of people. And like... This has been said a lot on like the You Made It Weird with Pete Holmes podcast, but like when a preacher does a good job, don't you think he feels like a comic that like I just murdered
absolutely
that room? Like the preacher just gets off and then God said and then whatever, and then he gets down and is like, yeah, I think I did, and then to speak to like kids retaining, you know, like, you know, young adults retaining more information, when you laugh you actually, you usually have filters in place for information and for text and like for spoken word or whatnot. There's filters in place. Like your mind's closed because you are constantly receiving images, like messages. Mm-hmm. When you laugh, you open up and things pass through you and ideas affect you a lot more readily than when you're not laughing.
Did you study psychology? That's a very. No,
I actually read this very interesting like study on like why rape jokes are bad. And like it went into like the biology, like the psychology and the of like laughing and like what laughing does and why commercials try and be funny nowadays.
Yeah.
Then it goes into like, and this is why rape jokes are bad.
I think rape commercials are the pinnacle of comedy writing nowadays.
Yeah. Just rape in general is the pinnacle of.
Okay. Gotta say those rape jokes are hilarious. Let me tell you, I know so many comedians are breaking
new
ground.
They just kill it when can't. You know, they don't just love it when they like talk about an experience that they totally know nothing about and are insensitive about.
That's the funniest.
Oh my gosh,
that's the funniest thing out there.
I love that reference that they make when you know, like when guys are talking about abortion and. I'm talking about my good friend, John Gregory, who's very funny. He always has a very good take on abortion. It's very funny, actually. I'm not saying abortion's funny, but there's lots of taboo subjects. Chris Rock, for the example, you heard about the thing?
Yeah,
I did not
monologue,
see it. I wanted to see it.
Okay, so do you want to explain what happened?
So yeah, his monologue, he made some 9/11 jokes, right? He made some jokes about, he's like, you know, the only way you're going to get, you can't get me into that building. I'll never go into it again. The new Freedom Tower, because he's like, what, can the building duck now? Like, you're going to have to put the IRS or something in
that
there to get me to go.
That is the one tower in the world that I will never go in.
Yeah. And then he also said about the Boston Marathon, how it was the bombing was the most sadistic terrorist attack because you're running for 26 miles. And then at the end, someone's like, run,
you know, like the
which
comedian,
I thought was kind of funny. It's inappropriate a little bit, but
it is.
The comedian part of me is like, ah, shit, Chris, that's really good.
Yeah,
and then you know, like the other part of me is like, damn,
you know,
yeah.
There's gonna be a lot of people are gonna say there's gonna be a lot of flack for this.
I think that you know, on crack.com, there was someone writing about rape jokes, and he said something that I think is so it applies to anything that's offensive. It's like, you can make a joke about literally anything. There's nothing that you can't make a joke about as long as you don't make the victim the punchline. You know? Like, I think that's a problem. True. A lot of problem I have with a lot of comics I see doing rape jokes is that, like, the funny part, in giant air quotes, is supposed to be you're making fun of the rape victim. And that's not okay, right? No. Like, you can make fun of the institutions of how people respond to rape. You know, you can make fun of all the things surrounding it, but the victim can't be the punchline. And I think that's the main point.
Yeah,
that's definitely
one of the most important things. Like, the victim can't.
Like, there's funny rape jokes. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, one off the top of my head. But I remember there was on some website, there was one, and this girl had this really funny rape joke.
There's one by Louis where...
Louis C.K.?
The punchline is still the victim, but the victim in this joke is Hitler.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if your victim is Hitler,
it's free for all.
I mean, yeah, like,
but I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, it depends on who the victim is.
But I think, like, if you have like if you make fun of the vulnerable person in that situation, then that's bad
because it allows it. You're belittling that experience, like that the victim's like, you know, the first hand account, that experience. You're just like, and then this person, you know, they blew a kazoo, and then. You're diminishing what it is, and then people laugh with you, and then they'll tell
that
joke.
I found that rape jokes are always funny as long as you make some reference along the way to the Kardashians. It's just at some point. No, it's just I don't know what it's something about the word Kardashian. It's just funny to me. I don't know what it is. People like it. I don't know.
If you just inject Kardashian in there,
just a little bit of Kardashian. Let me tell you something. Did you hear the one? About the, I forgot what it was. Kardashian kills him every time. That wasn't very funny.
Very topical. Or put a hashtag, say hashtag out loud. Right. Oh, man.
hashtag Kardashian.
See, it's funny when you say it like an old Jewish man.
I don't think an old Jewish man would know what a hashtag is, though.
But the idea of him knowing what a hashtag is absurd.
Is absurd.
It's like absurd. It's like a Hialeah girl talking about Chaucer.
Right. Give me. Oh my God, like, okay, like, this is so weird, whatever. Like, I was reading the Canterbury Tales the other day, and like, I totally feel that like the whole metamorphosis of the character in the way, and Chaucer, of course, is very deep in that sense. Like, his literal poetry is so great. Oh, hold on. Papi, please, shut up. I don't want to be late for work. Oh my God, shut up. That's baby Laz. That's my 4-year-old that still breastfeeds. Anyways.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I didn't even have to ask you to do it. You just went in there with it.
Of course. Awesome.
I love it.
The like Kardashian is funny because it's like, okay, in Japanese poetry, there's this device, like this like poetic device called Hanamakura, where like they...
You're such a fucking weeaboo.
I took Japanese lit in Massachusetts.
Oh wow. My God, dude.
That's
you
incredible.
Are,
I didn't
you
even know like, that exists.
You're like the internet. You're like the embodiment of the internet.
It's awesome.
I took
Do you
a
own
very...
a katana, Reggie? Do you own a katana?
I don't own a katana. I'm not that weeaboo. Please don't that swings it around for his YouTube videos.
And then Photoshops pictures of My yeah. Little Pony into yeah. it.
No, look, there's a literary device called Hanamakura. Look, and no weeaboo knows what I'm talking about. All
okay.
Right? So what happens is like they'll say like the winds blow fiercely, Hoenn Gate, right? And the reason why they say Hoenn Gate at the end is because that image or that place holds a lot of significance to winds or to what the poet is saying.
Uh-huh.
So do you get what I mean, right?
No, I have no idea what
okay,
you're talking about.
Okay, so when a rapper
so
when a rapper
tell
says
me again, this is NPR.
Diane Rehm.
This is Diane Rehm's and Reginald.
Thank you, Diane.
Your grasp of Japanese culture is so affluent.
We have to go to a commercial
we'll be
break.
Back. It's very interesting, though. What, I know nothing
like,
about that stuff.
Like when a rapper says something like, got lots of money, Brinks truck, the image of a Brinks truck is that it has bunch of money in it.
Okay.
So the rapper's amounts of money is like that of a Brinks truck.
Gotcha. Mm.
So in the case of Kardashian, like Kardashian's funny, one, because as a stand, you just say anything by itself, it's going to be funny because that has no connection to what you said before.
Gotcha. Right.
And then everyone's has a Kardashian joke. People perceive the Kardashians as a joke. Right. And then like people are ready to receive a Kardashian joke. That's like why Michael Jackson was so funny during like right. the mid 2000s.
Right.
So when you say Kardashian,
right.
Boom, Kardashian's funny because it carries
yeah,
weight
yeah.
with it.
Yeah, it carries a whole, but and you can interpret it in so many different ways.
Exactly.
Slut, plastic surgery, you whatever
that
you
takes,
want.
All that you know? Stuff is carried with yeah. the Kardashian name in terms of comedy.
I used to watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians when I would practice my drums.
Oh, wow. That's a good way of...
It's like really like... It like really drones you out, you know? It like really yeah. zones you out. I could understand why that show got popular, though. Because it's so hollow and vapid that if you want to idly shut your brain off, it's great entertainment. What you know, the people I know that do the most for the world watch the shittiest TV. Like my sister works in child advocacy and she's literally saving like children, like orphans lives every day. That's not an exaggeration. Like, you know, helping them out and like doing great things for people. And she goes home, she watches garbage TV. She watches Friends. She watches like horrible reality shows. She watches Lifetime movies.
I think
just
that's
the worst.
A really very, that's a very valid point. I think sometimes real, like TV I watch, and I don't help orphans, okay? I help Miami-Dade students, which are close. But, oh my
Happy
God,
birthday.
Sorry to my students out there. But, like, when I get home at night, I don't watch these shows that everyone follows, which are yeah. great shows and stuff. I literally, when I go home at night, I watch the Jewelry Network. Do you know the Jewelry
Is that
Network?
The one where they sell you stuff?
It's where they sell
it's
a revolving.
Like a, it's a revolving like,
and they
mirror
talk
thing.
About these pieces of
oh,
jewelry.
Oh, this cubic zirconium is just fantastic.
I love those like the knife. Have you seen the knife channel where they sell knives all night long?
Are you serious right now?
I'm being totally serious.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So that's like to an extreme.
Well, because it's a character. These characters are, that's part of it also.
Yeah.
These people that do these shows, they're almost like preachers, like what you were saying, Reggie.
Yeah.
Oh, and I'll tell you what we got right here. Oh my God, y'all. This piece, the Jewelry Network, I love. This piece, 4 o'clock in the morning, okay? Live. This piece, y'all, we got 400 of these. This is a sunburst gemstone, which we got from Tanzania, and this is the finest cut. Now, this is our 2 a.m. special, and I know y'all been waiting for this. I've got somebody take. Look at that spark. Look at that. I want to tell you, Jim, I have never seen a Tanzania speckled spark stone with that sort of. Well, I'll tell you what. You know, we were lucky to get them, Marissa. We've got two. What? $29.99? We can't afford it. $9.99, folks. $9.99. If you call now, the first 500. Well, I can't believe. I'm gonna buy myself. I love that shit. I love it.
That could be a very successful character. I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know,
they talk just like that.
That fake like enthusiasm. Yeah. I tried out for one of those shows once.
Yeah.
And I didn't get the part. I wasn't good enough. I actually did. Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah.
I would watch you. I would watch you do Walter Mercado selling cubic zirconia.
When did you first watch Walter Mercado?
Well, for those of you that don't know who Walter Mercado is, he's a world famous Hispanic astrologer. I mean, in the Western Hemisphere, every Latin woman over the age of 60 knows.
Can I interject a fun fact?
Yeah.
That. I was at the Miami Herald late at night, right? And I was talking with, because my friend, she used to work there, and we were hanging out, and I was talking to the night desk people, and they said that, like, the main driver of traffic in the morning to the Herald website is Walter Mercado.
Oh, really?
Like, he's like, he gets more page views than anything on the Miami Herald.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It is. A lot of people don't know who he is, but to answer your question, when I was a little kid,
old is Walter?
Walter, actually, I'm the one that knows this because I'm a freak about Walter. He is, we think, approximately 84.
We think. Oh my God, that's amazing.
Approximately, we carbon dated him.
Well, yeah, I know
for sure.
He's
like the Joan Rivers of astrology.
I know for sure he was 82 two or three years ago, so he's probably 84 to 85 now. But if you saw a picture of him, he's like the Joan Rivers.
Yeah.
As a kid, we didn't have like cable and stuff. We just had regular channels, and I thought the Hispanic channels were hilarious. I don't know what it is, slapstick humor. And then late at night, they'd have this guy come on with this harp music and
it looks like a 70s porno, all cloudy and whatnot.
Unbelievable.
And, like,
and I wasn't sure if it was a man or a woman. And he has this blonde hair and a cape with jewels. It's like, think of like Liberace / Farrah Fawcett. I don't know. It's unbelievable. And he would come out, hi. And he only spoke Spanish. And I don't speak Spanish. And he'd come out and he'd go, hi, mi amor. Yo soy Walter Mercado. Hi. Today, and paraphrasing, today I will tell you your horoscopia for your futura, for your love, for your happiness, for your wealth, for your misery, for your death, for everything, mi amor, before you. And if you're an 8-year-old kid and you've been watching bad black and white TV, I Love Lucy or whatever, which is great, and you turn this shit on, it's like, for me, it was like crack. And so I do many impersonations of him, yes.
I love Walter Mercado. Like, you know, we had a party at our house and you came by, did Walter Mercado. People still talk about that. Like how awesome that was. And like you just, and all my friends, like you just, like some of them you made fun of mercilessly and they loved every second of it. They loved
it wasn't
so
me.
Much.
It was Walter making
fun of him. Yeah, it was Walter making fun of him. But yeah, the Walter Mercado character is just, it's great.
Because it's a very true Miami character.
It's
too.
Very true Miami. And I don't know if it would work in other cities as well.
I don't know. It might. That's the thing, you know. It's
might.
It's like look at Portlandia, you know. Mm-hmm. Like you don't, I thought it was funny before I ever went to Portlandia.
Oh, it's so
I think
funny.
That certain characters that are specific to places, mm-hmm. like if they're good enough,
right.
even if they're describing a certain stereotype, mm-hmm. if they're good enough, it's funny to everybody. Like yeah. I like the show, what's that show called? Summer Heights High. You ever seen that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing show. And the guy, Chris Lilly, does three different characters. Mm-hmm. And one of the characters is like this guy from Tonga. This kid who's like an islander and he lives in Australia, you know, right. and he's got like the kinky hair and stuff.
Right.
And like, he's always like fucking with the teacher. He's like, fuck you, miss. And the teacher's like, out of my class, Jonas. And he's like, I was saying, puck you, like a hockey puck, miss. Like, and I'm sure
so
that
it's just, his words are confused.
And,
yeah.
And if you live in Australia, I'm sure that's like, oh my God, I know this guy from Tonga. Right. I have no idea. Still hilarious to me. Or like that movie, you ever seen that movie, Waiting for Guffman?
Oh. One of my favorite movies. Oh,
hilarious movie.
Christopher Guest. Anything Christopher
yeah,
Guest
Yeah, it's just, it's like the same, yeah, the same people that did A Mighty Wind.
Yeah, Best in Show.
Best in Show. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never...
Spinal Tap, actually.
Oh, this is Spinal Tap,
yeah.
too? I did not know mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
They really killed it on the mockumentary. Like,
oh, my God.
And I've never had a drama teacher like that. I'm sure mm-hmm. that there's people that were in drama that are like, that guy nailed what it's like to have like an overzealous community theater director.
Oh,
I have no idea, but I fucking died watching that movie because it's funny enough, you know?
It is dead on, and I've never had a guy like that or a teacher, whatever you want to call
it.
But you know that's real. Those are real characters, you know, that are exaggerated. A little bit. And so when I do a character, I like to exaggerate them a little bit, but they have to be a little bit based in reality, you know?
Yeah.
And that's based in reality.
And that's what gives it its validity.
Absolutely.
Or another great example is Vicky Pollard on Little Britain. You ever seen Little Britain?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Oh, you got to watch Little Britain. That's great. Some great character work. Have you seen
I love Tracy Ullman.
The Kate
Have you seen the movie Wedding Crashers with Bridesmaids?
Bridesmaids.
Yeah, I saw Bridesmaids.
Yeah, do you know the roommate of Kristen Wiig,
the
fat
girl?
Guy? No, the fat guy.
The fat guy. Yeah. And he's the brother of the the weird
Rebel.
Roommate.
And he does this character called Vicky Pollard. She's like a chav. Right. And in England, it's like kind of like a hybrid between ghetto and white trash. They wear these like track suits and this really bad makeup and this ponytail.
Right.
And she's like, and she goes to like this like really bad school. And they're like, and like everyone always confronts her if she did, like, did you do something wrong? She's like, I ain't never done nothing, never. You see, like, and she like goes on these like crazy rants. It's like, you see, Jimmy was kissing Mackenzie under the stairs, and I was like, oh, you shouldn't do that. You're well gonna get beatings, but she did anyways. And like, I was smoking a joint, but I don't think I never done nothing, never. And it's like, if you live in England, that's a hilarious. I have never encountered that person before,
but you get it.
And I think so with Miami too, because Miami is so unique. It's so rich for. Yeah. For those kind of types of characters. And I think Miami's one of the most unique places in America.
No doubt about that. Yeah. It's very, very unique.
Miami should have a Little Britain. Like, just thinking about that right now, like Little Britain, like if you ever want to see a really good show, Little Britain.
Yeah.
And the Kate, what's that? Who's the redheaded comedian from Britain? The one that was in Doctor Who?
I don't remember. Who's a ginger comedian from Britain? I don't know.
Yeah. James Pate?
No. It's this woman.
I don't know.
Well, check your references first before you mention things, Reggie.
Oh my God.
You're embarrassing ourselves in front of our guests.
She did the character, like, are you bothered?
No, I don't know.
Oh my
God. Oh, are you bothered? I remember that show, but I don't remember the character. Oh my gosh.
Why? How am I drawing a blank now?
I always, for some reason, I can't find it. I was always bothered by, I mean, I always blank on things when I'm on the podcast for some reason. I don't know if it's the windscreens. They're intimidating me.
They're very, I don't know. I feel like there's little walls between us right
now. Yeah, I know. But, you know,
but
we
got
to make
it.
Sure it sounds like NPR on here.
Yes.
You can't have that going into the microphone.
That's right.
You know, I went through a lot of different testing before I figured out on this setup. On like the windscreens because I'm like insane. Like I'm insane when it comes to this kind of stuff.
You're a professional. You got your stuff together here. It's really, really impressive. All these wires and
I wish Guitar Center gave me a professional discount.
They should, right?
I accumulate things. So
do they have those little guitar centers like cards, like frequent guitar playing miles or something?
Frequent guitar playing miles. You've traveled over 3,000 frets. You've traveled over 3,000 frets.
You're entitled to two free picks.
Yeah.
This is a really great setup and a great show. And I'm going to miss seeing you down here, but luckily I will still have Reginald for a while, I hope. And by the way, I'm not ending this show. I'm just...
I know it sounds like you are, but we're not. Yeah, no, I decide when it ends. I have the power. Yeah, we'll be here all night if I want us to be.
You know what I like about you, Marinov?
What?
Is that you had the good sense to... hold on. Shelley, turn off the television. Turn off Shelley. She's hard of hearing. But what was I saying? Oh, you're a very nice looking young man. I know you're seeing my handshake, and okay. Bye.
I think it's hilarious how you do your hand shaking, even though no one can see it.
I just want to get character.
You got to get into it. When you were doing the Dr. Doom henchman, you were like really just fucking, you were doing the emoting.
That's
because you're a professional. That's your version of the windscreen.
It's doing visual.
That's what every sound booth looks like for The Simpsons. You know, like if you ever see like behind the scenes stuff, they're like...
Emoting.
Shaking, moving their hands.
So I want to ask you this. What year did you, you were born in Miami,
yes,
right? Do you want to tell us what year that is?
1967.
Wow, you look good, Freddie. Gotta say, man,
I'm trying. thanks.
Very sexy.
Call me later.
Okay. Happy birthday.
All right.
Yeah, but so 1960, so did you, were there a lot of Hispanics when you were back then?
I mean, when I was a kid, I mean, when I can remember... When I was 4 or 5, Miami was, we lived in a duplex right off of West Flagler near what today is the Midway Mall, which is Mall of the Americas. And I remember back then, half of our neighbors were all American, but half of them were Cuban kids. So I grew up in a pretty Cuban Miami. Yeah.
So did you feel like an outsider being a gringo?
I did a little bit. A little bit. I mean, that sounds weird, but you got to understand, growing up in Miami in the 1980s, Miami was a very turbulent, there was a very, very Hispanic. It was much more Hispanic than it is now.
Really?
I don't think you guys understand that.
Like super dangerous during the 80s?
It was very dangerous. Like, we were sheltered a little bit. We moved to Coral Gables and we went to a little private school. But, you know, outside of this cocoon... You know, Miami was, no one spoke English. No one. We had just had an influx of approximately 130,000.
From Mariel Boatlift?
From the Mariel Boatlift within a 4 month span, you know.
And listeners, if you don't know what that is, if you've ever seen Scarface, that's why there was all those tents under the highway.
That's exactly right. Tent City. My dad took me to see Tent City when I was a little kid. I remember seeing it very vividly. By the way, that movie is quite accurate in its portrayal of that era. There's no doubt about it.
Really?
But Miami was a very, very tense, angry. There was a lot of tension between the Americans that lived here and the massive amount of Cuban Americans that lived here that were already here. It was something. And my school was mainly Hispanic. I went to a private high school, Columbus, which was already half Hispanic. And I just grew up in a Hispanic Miami. So for me, when I'd go out of town to visit my relatives up north, it would be like, oh my God, like this is so weird, you know? Like everyone spoke English and everyone kind of looked white. And
I get that a lot too. Like I get culture shock. Like I went to Portland and I'm like, everyone here is white. Everyone speaks Spanish. Everyone speaks English. You know?
And I got to be honest with you, it kind of made me a little bit uncomfortable. I'm used to being here. There's a weird tension in Miami that you get used to, and it's maybe it's bad, but I like it. I like me too. For some reason.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like I like how Miami has that grit and that has that uniqueness. I like how people are late to everything and don't speak English and drive horrible, you know.
I do.
It's a weird sort of endearing.
Weird. It is. It's kind of endearing. Like,
when someone passes you asshole. On the right in the yeah. turning.
It's an asshole. It's a likable you know, asshole. It's like,
I like that I
like
have.
Tony Stark.
It's the anti-hero.
I love having, you know, knowing a few things about Haitians and Haitian culture. I love knowing about the differences.
I don't enjoy Haitians.
Oh, Haitians are the best.
I don't know who I dislike more, Haitians or Nicaraguans.
Oh, that's a tough one. Well, Nicaraguans are much better at cleaning.
Yeah.
But, and oh God, see, that's what gets me in trouble. See what I just did?
Yeah.
But I was in character.
Yeah. Freddie Stebbins. That character.
It's a slate cleaner.
Freddie Stebbins with 1D.
With 1D. With 1D. That's right. So, yeah. Miami for me was a unique place. LA was interesting.
LA was very white too when I went. I'm like,
very
white.
People. Very white. LA's a piece of cake compared to living in Miami. And everyone that's going to move to New York, that's great. Love New York. Love New York. Okay. Said it. But New York is so easy, it seems.
You think so?
People are so friendly there compared to Miami.
Yeah, Miami, like...
And you don't have to drive there. It's like a big Disneyland for adults. I think New York is, like, fun. You're like, I don't...
Yeah, when I went there last, I was like, oh, people are here pretty polite compared to Miami in some ways. And rude in some ways, too.
You notice people from New York, when they move down here, they can't take it. They just can't take it after 6 months. They're like,
oh, God, people... New Yorkers...
It's so uncultured down here. It's so hot. It's so difficult. You have to drive. So... That whole thing, if you can make it there, make it anywhere, well, maybe in entertainment, but I think if you can make it living down here for 10 years, you'll enjoy any other place in the world.
Yeah, I mean, like, I always have New Yorkers bitching on my Facebook feed. It's just like, dude, if you hate it so much, just go back to New York.
Yeah, but they don't. You know why? Because for 6 months of the year, this is the greatest place to be. I don't care. I'm a little biased.
No, but it is, you know, it's like, why do you live here? Because New York is, because we were, you know, I was between New York and LA, because, you know, I want to get into comedy writing. So I want to try to, you know, go to the place where the industry is. Mm-hmm. And Christine is like, I lived in New York. Mm-hmm. It was cool. I did it. But I really do not want to go back to New York. Yeah. I don't want to deal with a cold. I don't want to deal with having to walk everywhere. I don't want to deal with like homeless guys jerking off on the subway.
Right.
You know, like I don't want to deal with all that.
That again? The homeless guy jerking off on the subway. Where was that?
That was usually on 49th.
Okay. I just want to know.
And then there's another guy he's on 100th Street.
Oh, I know him. No, I know him.
Wait, do you keep tabs on him?
Like... Yeah, I do. I have a book. Because some of them, they have nicer dicks than the other ones, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the guy on 100th is...
Once you go to 149th, that's when he has the real nice dick. Hey, he's pretty long, kind of
thick. I like my
thick.
Homeless guys jerking off circumcised. Come on, Giuliani, bring him back.
This is disgusting. This man still has his foreskin.
Hey, I like it uncut. You know what I'm saying? Get me wrong. Call me crazy. But if I'm going to have a crackhead,
want
him
crazy.
Uncut. You're crazy. I want more for my buck. You know what I'm saying?
But, you know, I always hear New Yorkers talking about it. But it's like...
Well, look, and Christine, New York is by far the greatest place to do comedy. There's no doubt about it and all that good stuff. And there's much more opportunity there. I'm just saying, lifestyle, I think it might be fun for a while.
Yeah.
But
that's how Christine feels. Like she liked it for a while, but she doesn't want to deal with all the bullshit. Like all, and she came back to Miami and she's like, once you move out of New York, you're like, whoa, I didn't realize how hard my life was dealing with all that crap. Like things are so much more slow paced, you know, like you don't have to deal with, there's so many things that you don't have to deal with. Like you don't have to pay $3,000 for a shoebox, you know, like
right.
A shoebox. Oh, a house. I was like, a shoebox.
Yeah.
Well, that's crazy.
Well, in New York, shoeboxes are very all the regulation. Expensive. I have a Gucci shoebox that's worth at least $2,500.
it's all regulation, you know, they're making it more expensive because of shoebox taxes.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. But yeah, so like LA seemed like the option. I'm more trying to get on the writing track than the pure comedy track. So that seems like the place to go.
I think it'll be great.
I'm excited because I never really lived anywhere else except for, I mean, I've studied abroad, but like the longest was for 6 weeks. I lived in Tallahassee, but that doesn't really count, even though that was culture shock because of all the white people there.
Yeah.
The first time I heard someone use the N-word unironically, or like not as a joke, that was like, whoa, holy shit.
Oh, you mean why are you hanging with people that use it as a joke?
Well, because I don't like black people.
Then it's not a, wait, what's going on here? Just, you know, just hanging out with my friends.
I'm secretly racist, Reggie. I edit all these podcasts. I don't know if you listen. I edit them to make you look bad.
Now that I think back.
No, but people, like, you know, if you're at a party, someone might toss a word around, and then it's just like, whoa, people say that? Like,
that's crazy.
People, like, really say that and really mean it? That's crazy.
Yeah, you never, I mean, I don't hear that anywhere. Like, seriously.
Yeah, but if you go to the South, man, it's like,
that's crazy.
It's a little bit more accepted over there. You know what I mean?
I know. It's but weird.
It is a culture shock going to somewhere where everyone speaks English. I'm just like, I was in Gainesville. Like, I had to drive up to see my sister. Mm-hmm. And then I was at the gas station. I was like, ¿Cuánto cuesta para todo aquí? Mm-hmm. And this lady was like, what? Yeah. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. How much does this cost?
Yeah. You know, you're one funny kike. But anyways, I know what you mean.
So do you feel like an outsider when you were a kid? Because I feel like, for me, sometimes being the only gringo in this situation, sometimes it feels a little
absolutely
strange, you know?
Yeah, in my high school classes...
I'm sorry, you guys feel uncomfortable.
We're sitting... I have other friends who are African-American, and they're like, when I talk about this stuff, they're like, really? Really?
Shut up, Reggie. This is about him. It's not about you.
I'm going
somewhere with this.
I mean, it's kind of weird in Miami. This is the only place where a white guy could slightly feel... And by the way, it's not so bad to be a white guy in Miami, by the way.
No, it's not.
In fact, it's kind of a status thing, I think, somehow, in some evil racist way.
Yeah, because we're the superior race.
But when you're going to a public high school and or a regular high school where everyone speaks English, but you can't understand what the teacher is saying or the students around you, because they're all speaking Spanish, even the teacher, even the jokes, even everything. And you're it does feel kind of strange, you know? And I found that in the lunchroom, like the Anglo kids would kind of we'd kind of sit together.
Just because you could speak to each other?
Well, it was just
and
weird.
Shave each other's heads.
But look, like, that was back in the 80s when there was a stark difference between Hispanics and Anglos. Now everyone's kind of all the same,
because it's like, you know, you got second, third generation
and
they're more integrated into America.
To America.
By the
America.
Way, Reggie, we are minorities here. Okay, so you can't talk to us about you can't chastise us for feeling like minorities, because we literally are the minorities.
Did you know that Miami is the only major metropolitan city in the United States, meaning over 1 to 2 million people, where the majority of the population is of Latino or Hispanic heritage, 60%.
I don't believe that. What about Tulsa, Oklahoma?
No, we don't count Mexicans. So anyways, but yeah, it's the only one, and that makes Miami a very unique city. And we also have one of the largest African-American populations in the state of Florida. Miami was actually founded by a lot of African-Americans and Bahamians. In fact, one-third of the people that signed the Miami Charter were black. And
really?
So Miami has a very, very deep history, believe it or not, of different ethnicities. Anyway, I know that because I'm also a historian for art for History Miami, and I give tours and stuff like that, just so you know.
I find that, you know, like, sometimes I'll find myself making fun of Miami just to cope with the craziness.
You have to,
you know. Do you think that happened when you were a kid? I know it's a leading question. Do you think making fun of the different, you know,
absolutely. Are you kidding me? That's the whole idea. I think it was a coping mechanism for me to make fun of these accents. And also, I wasn't really the athletic type, and I wasn't a brainiac like Reggie here, obviously. And I might not have been the best looking kid, but I could do these funny voices, and it would get me into parties, and suddenly, you know, and I'd, oh dude, this guy Freddie, he does an awesome Cuban, man. So, and I'd come in, do the Cuban thing, and I'd be like, okay, let me tell you something. Happy birthday. In Cuba, sí, but in America, no. My English not very nice, but I love everybody. Barack Obama. Happy birthday.
We should really look back at those parties. We should really...
Yeah.
Type of parties
so
were these.
It was a coping mechanism, I guess, and that encouraged my behavior. And
I find myself, I would do that sometimes, because most of my friends are Cuban. Mm-hmm. You know, like, my best friends are Cuban. So, like, I would sometimes be like... Like, just feeling different, you know, because and like, just the whole, it's like, I would be, since, like, I'm a white dude, I'd be a little bit less like collectivist in the terms of like they would always like we all live together and they would always like buy their groceries together or like they always wanted to be hanging out and like sometimes I liked my alone time, you know, which I think is a little more of a white dude thing to have because like all my Cuban friends are always hanging around with each other, always liking to talk shit. I liked my alone time. So sometimes I'd be like, feel like a little bit of an outcast, you know? And, and like, I mean, I make fun of Christine Cuban stuff that she does all the time.
Well,
it's,
you know, there's cultural differences.
But she loves this though. She loves
it. But I think it's in all, I think it's better to have these types of issues than to not, you know, to be in a more multi-ethnic setting than to be stuck somewhere where you just can't relate at all.
Or just, or it's just super homogenous. That's what I like about
Catherine Tate. There you go. That's who I was thinking about all the way back.
Is that her name?
Catherine Tate. The Catherine Tate
Show. Oh, I think I know who you're talking about.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, I know who you're talking about now.
Sweet Jesus. Oh,
she
that
did
feels
all
good.
The different all
Thank
the different
you for the
characters.
Release. Yeah, she had a great sketch comedy show.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was a few years ago.
Yes, it's on Netflix, and it's brilliant. Catherine Tate. The Catherine Tate Show.
The Catherine Tate Show.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, she would do male
I'm so sorry.
Characters
you're getting into something and it was very good and then I just remembered.
No, that's a good sweet release, man. You got to say it.
It Feels takes good. A long time to, you know, come sometimes. Yeah. You know what I mean? And when you get it out there.
He doesn't have a lot of sensitivity.
No,
he's the
he
wrong
doesn't.
Lube.
He
he's
doesn't,
the
but
last
when he does,
lube.
Man.
Just go dry. Go dry. Chafe that shit.
Bite the pillow. Go
in
and dry.
Choke it like it owes me money. Just...
Yeah. Yeah.
Catherine Tate.
I think it is. I think it is wonderful, by the way, that we've got a real, real, real diverse cast on this show. As an electrical engineering professor at Miami-Dade College, I feel that
that character makes people uncomfortable sometimes.
Yes, it does.
You know, I was doing that character at Casa de Haha a few weeks ago, and I do him in makeup, and the people in the front, they don't know who I am.
In brown face.
In blackface. And by the way, I got a really dirty look from this black guy that was walking out, and I don't blame him, but I wasn't trying to be African-American. I was trying to be Hindu. It's a different type of blackface. So I did that character, and they thought I was that guy. They thought I was.
They really did?
When I lived in L.A., Mike.
I don't think anyone was fooled.
I don't know. When I lived in L.A., I would go in full... I would get up an hour early before work, and I would go in full... I worked at a Warner Brothers Records, which was very liberal, and everyone dressed whatever they wanted to do. And I would take the bus. And one morning, I went in full makeup, black, brown face, hair black, mustache, professional mustache, members-only jacket, briefcase, with my accent. And I went literally down the street, got on the bus... hung out on the bus, went to the next bus stop, and I went through the whole day, including at work, but they were in on it.
Yeah.
And then back in character.
Wow.
And I remember I wasn't being jokey either. I just wanted to see if I could pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled it off. There's no doubt about it.
Wow.
Now, today, people do look at you differently. Like, there was this woman that always let me sit next to her on the bus.
Uh-huh.
That day, she... didn't know it was me, and she did not let me sit on next to her on the bus.
Oh my
Isn't that
God.
Weird? It's almost like the Eddie Murphy sketch where he becomes white. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen that before?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he goes on the bus, and they're like, oh, man, you're white. You don't have to pay. Uh-huh. Like this ulterior. I did that once. I did it once. And I think ever since I did that, I felt that there was something Andy Kaufman-esque about it that was cool. But now I have to be careful doing that because I don't want to give the wrong impression.
Yeah.
You know? But I still do it sometimes.
So you're being a pussy about it is pretty much what you're saying.
No, I do it in my one-man shows and he kills. So.
Yeah, you're being too much. You care too much about offending people. You need to be edgy. All right? You need to tell rape jokes in that voice.
I tell lesbian jokes in that voice.
Look, everyone knows that a really good sign that you're doing well in a set is that everyone's uncomfortable.
Oh, well, then I'm really successful.
They don't get it.
You're pushing them.
They don't get it.
They don't get it. They don't get how funny I am. Why do they not think I'm funny? Something's wrong with
Clearly,
them.
Clearly, it's people in Miami.
You know, it's really funny because I always make a parallel between DJs and comedians, right? Mm-hmm. And I think with DJs and comedians, there's like those comedians and those DJs that the crowd is not responding well.
Right.
And they'll blame it on the crowd.
You know? Oh, it's always a crowd.
I know this DJ that's like, yeah, I'm spinning this music and this crowd isn't fucking digging it. Like, they're fucking lame. And it's like, well, your job is to make them dance.
Yeah.
Like, if they want to hear Girls Want to Have Fun and you want to play like Baltimore Club or whatever.
It's a little different when you're a DJ, I would say.
But I think with comedy too, it's like, oh, I'm spouting out this like crazy, I'm ranting and they're not laughing. Like, don't they see how bad Obama is? And it's like, your job is to make them laugh. Like, and if you can't, like,
that's
a
good point.
You could say what you're going to say. Right. And like, I understand, like, you should push yourself and try to do things that maybe they're not going to laugh at because you're trying out something new. But the whole set, no one laughs and they're just really uncomfortable. Then you're failing as a comedian because your job as a comedian is to make people laugh.
That's right. I agree. Although I think you got to admit, though, that crowd's moods can differ.
Yeah, yeah.
No matter how good you are as a comedian, sometimes you get a crowd that is just, oh my God, they just have that energy and it makes you more confident and it makes you funnier.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you do get a crowd that, okay, maybe you make them laugh. You always want to make them laugh. But sometimes you get a crowd where there's just something about the crowd that's...
sucks.
Is it your fault that you're not hooking into that? No, I got to tell you, I think sometimes the crowd...
sometimes the crowd's bad. I'll
it can
agree
hurt
with you.
Your, you know.
I think it's more but of I'm a saying that, 49-51 relationship. 51 the comedian, 49 the crowd.
Yeah.
But I think what I'm saying is like, if that is happening to you consistently.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Because it's like, I've seen comics that consistently, they're making the crowd uncomfortable and they're sucking the energy out of the room. And like, they just want to go through their rant about whatever they want to talk about. And it's like,
it's the worst.
It's like, so you're not doing your job. If you're interested in that, then start like an internet radio show, like Alex Jones or whatever.
Right.
But like, please don't go up and and ruin it for the next comic that's going on. And you know, it's like, it doesn't exist within a vacuum, but
that's very true.
And it's like, I think it's the same thing with DJs. It's like, look, man, if no one's dancing, then maybe you need to, maybe you need to not play the music that you're playing and they don't
want
it.
That's
You can't force a hip hop crowd to listen to like Italo disco.
You know
what I mean?
Right, right. No, I agree. I agree. And that's why the three of us are here doing what we're doing.
That's why I got the windscreens.
Thank God.
Not making people uncomfortable.
I was listening to a storm earlier. This thing would be covered. Oh my God. It'd be like Tropical Storm Hugo in here. And I knew Hugo. So anyways, that's a different story. Oh, I've got issues.
We all know, Freddie. We all have issues. We wouldn't be comedians if we didn't have issues.
Yeah, you're right.
If we were normal people, we'd be stockbrokers or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'd have good jobs. My parents wouldn't be, you know, disappointed.
Yeah.
Story of our lives.
I'd probably still be in college.
How's that comedy thing going? I still get that. How's that comedy thing
going? Oh, you mean the thing I've been doing for a decade? Yeah, it's gone.
That thing I got written up in the Herald about? How's that comedy thing doing?
Yeah, it's like asking a doctor, how's that doctor thing going?
Right.
Just cough. Don't ask me how it's going.
I'm still doing the thing that I do. Dave Williams said, he posted something really great about that. It's like people ask him, I forget how he phrased it, but it was really funny. He's like, people ask him like, oh, I hope you make it one day. It's like, oh, you hope I make it at this thing I've been doing for professionally for 10 years.
Right.
Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right. Right. I love also when they say, oh, good for you. Good for you.
You should try and make it.
As if that's some sort of like... something like, you're doing to just make like yourself just, feel better.
Right?
Good for
it's
you.
Like you're special. Like, I hate it when my family says, like, you should try making money off of that. You know?
Right. As if we don't want to.
Tim Hanley was saying how people, he was like, yeah, people are always asking him, like, hey, you should go on Last Comic Standing. It's like, no, I don't know. I'm pretty much on the fence about that primetime network exposure. I don't know. I don't know if I want to do that. Like, come on. Give me a break.
How's that working out for you? I've heard that one too. How's that working out for you?
It's working out pretty bad when people ask me questions like this, but other than that, it's good. Or like people are like, are you still doing comedy? It's like, yes.
They're
going to
still
thing.
Ask you once you get your hour on Netflix. Like it's still going to, they're still going to ask.
Yeah. It's like, so you're still doing comedy? It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing I resigned to do.
Uh-huh.
Are you still?
It's comedy, right? It's comedy. It's comedy, right? Yeah.
Still doing that?
Uh-huh.
Right.
I know.
All right, guys. So you want to wrap it up?
Let's wrap this up.
All right. So, Freddie, where can the people find you online?
Oh, well, thank you for asking. Online, you can find me at freddystebbins.com. That's Freddie double D, Stebbins double B .com. And I'll have all my upcoming shows and dates posted. I'm doing a great event called Fart Basil this in early first week of December. I'm hoping this man will be a part of it. This is a mock of Art Basel, which is a big festival down here. And we're going to have 3 to 4 nights in different venues of called Fart Basel. And with all the comedians in Miami. So that's my next big event. And you could also catch me on Shake 108, which is 107.9 FM every day from 5 to 7 p.m. It's a
great station. Good playlist, too.
Yeah. Central Miami, but we're working on expanding the signal. And also, of course, at Taurus Bar and Grill, where you can always have a great drink and a great time.
Do it in the Dr. Doom henchman voice.
Taurus Bar and Grill, where you can always have merriment, and it's 100 selection of whiskeys and beers for your content. Tuesday night is trivia night, Wednesday karaoke, and of course, laugh along with Freddie Stebbins on Thursday night at the Taurus Doom.
No children under 12.
No children under 12, please.
Dogs allowed, though.
Dogs allowed. Reggie?
You can find me on Twitter at ratchet underscore Reggie. And then you can also find me on Instagram at Black Dadaist. And you can find the Black and Jew podcast on Twitter.
Black and Jew pod. You can find me, Mike Marinoff, on Twitter, Mike Marinoff Comedy on Facebook. And make sure tweet at us. Tell us what you think. Tell us how much you loved Freddie Stebbins, because we all know you did. You're lying to yourself, and you're a hateful person if you didn't. So until next time, guys.
See ya.